This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to the Fan of History Podcast, Episode 8. Event of the 930s BC. I'm the fan of history, and with me is another fan of history, and it is not Kevin. We had a huge gap between the recording of this episode and episode 7, and when I wanted to resume the podcast, Kevin was no longer available. So I had to go out and find somebody else, and I did. Brennan. Hi, Brennan.
Hello, Dan. Yep, I am Brennan, and I'll be joining Dan for these episodes. Dan and I have known each other for quite a while, and he also knows that I have a great love of history as well. So I'm glad to be doing this with you, Dan.
Yeah, Brennan did create the original Fan of History logo, and he was sort of following the YouTube channel from the start. And we have done another podcast together, so we sort of know that we can talk to each other.
Yeah, we've known each other for a while, and I think we have such similar interests, it seemed to make sense to go ahead and work on this with you as well.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on board.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Let's talk about the 930s BC.
All right. So, as everyone knows, in the last episode, kind of left off, where are we starting physically in this episode? In what area of the world?
I like to start in Syria and southern Turkey because of the events of the Arameans. I mentioned them before on the show. And the Arameans are behaving a lot like orcs since they arrived in the 11th century. But in Syria and southern Turkey, they are encountering the Neo-Hittites, and they have assimilated, they have sort of merged with them, moved into cities, which is against Aramean culture. And they are sort of being absorbed by the superior Neo-Hittite culture. The Neo-Hittites, as I said before, also quite weird, because they are going with their lives as if the Hittite Empire did not fall 300 years before. So they're like doing art and statues and gods and stuff, just like in the good old days. And for some reason, the Arameans just love this.
Well, that's interesting. I know that if you look back in Japanese culture, they have waves or hills and valleys, if you will, of acceptance and then shutting out. And what it seems like they do is they accept a new thing or a new culture, such as China, and they absorb it. And I know they like to think they perfected it.
The American culture after World War II.
Yeah, exactly. Is this something similar? Did it just happen that it was in one of those hills and valleys of a culture's
I think the Neo-Hittites would accept anyone who liked their culture. But it's weird that Babylon has a long history of absorbing attacking peoples. So Babylon was ruled for many hundreds of years up to this point by Kassites, which was an invading barbarian tribe, and they just totally assimilated into Babylon and became Babylonians. But the Arameans don't do this in Babylon. In Babylon, they are running around in the fields and stealing stuff. But there is another culture that has started to assimilate the Arameans as well. And they are right next door to the Hittites. It's the Assyrians, because they need more warriors for the armies of Ashur. And the Arameans have qualified for that, because they are the last people that really beat up the Assyrians in the 11th century.
So they're just trying to... they know that they got... they hit them pretty hard, so they're thinking, hey, maybe if we can convince these guys
to
fight on our side.
And Assyria is now... last episode, they had their first successful campaigns for a long time, for 100 years at least. So now they are looking outwards a bit. And there used to be a tradition that Ashur, the god of war, who is the one god of Assyria, they have this weird monotheism where if you worship another god, you are really worshiping Ashur, but you don't know it. So there is only one god, but he's all gods. And their religion breaks down at times, sort of it's not logical. We'll talk more about that in the 9th century. But there's king in Assyria, Tiglath-Pileser II, and he dies in 935 BC. And is succeeded by his son, Ashur-dan II. And this guy is responsible for a lot of stuff. And we'll talk more about him in the next and the next episode and the episode after that. But they're now looking to revive this tradition that after the harvest, every Assyrian man who is anything gathers, form an army under the king, and they march out and beat up someone and take their stuff. So it's sort of annual robbing campaigns. But they, of course, see them as incredibly glorious military campaigns for the glory of God.
The one God.
Yes.
Ashur.
They will always have... Right now, they have no contact with Babylon, because there are like vast hordes of Arameans between Babylon and Assyria. But when they get back into contact with Babylon, they too suffer from this phenomenon that they are absorbed into Babylonian culture. So... the Babylonian gods will have quite an influence on Assyria, and they constantly have to remind themselves that these ancient Babylonian gods are also aspects of Ashur, the god of war. And this sometimes breaks down.
Right. It's wow. Seems like Babylon must have been an awesome place to be.
Yeah, and it's awesome for such a long time. It's built in the Hammurabi forms the kingdom. In the 19th century BC, if I'm not mistaken. And then it, when Alexander comes there in 330s, 320s, it's still going on.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
It's for a system of rules to function with that many people inside such a closed area and to last that long. That is amazing.
Yeah, we'll talk a lot more about Babylon in upcoming episodes, but it's a fantastic
place. Sounds good.
But we should remember that the Assyrian core cities, Ashur, the capital, Nineveh, and third place that I can't remember right now, they are even older than Babylon. So the Assyrians have been around forever. They already have had two empires.
It's pretty amazing.
And these enormous stretches of time, it's hard to imagine that there is almost zero progress for 1,000 years, but...
Yeah, it reminds me of when Cape Horn, I believe it was Cape Horn, was first navigated by, I think it was the English. They found a tribe of people that had been living down there in such harsh conditions, and had never advanced past Stone Age, even though it was well into, it just wasn't that long ago. And I'm wondering if it's something similar, because you have such harsh conditions that the stress on the people is so great that they never evolve. Yeah. Can it be a situation?
I think there is a tribe in Guatemala still that has no contact with the outside world and lives in the Stone Age.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering if there is similar anti-stress. I wonder if that can also keep a society, not necessarily from evolving, but from devolving or improving because everybody's so comfortable.
Yeah, it might be. They are extremely conservative societies as well, because this has been working so long, so they are not inclined to change anything.
Exactly.
But the Assyrians will change things and invent a lot of things and make progress very soon.
Sounds good. So, I'm looking over the notes, and we have some Shawshank.
Yeah, Shawshank. He's going to be the main character of our next episode. He's the pharaoh of Egypt. He's the first pharaoh of the 22nd dynasty. He is a Libyan. And at this time, he is doing a lot of work with the Egyptian military, because Egypt was divided right before his time. But he's put an end to that. So he controls all of Egypt. There is a small uprising in the Dakhla Oasis, but he puts that down. And he is training the army. And he is also reaching out from... Siamun did this a couple of years before, but before the Bronze Age collapse in the 13th century BC, there was a lot of trade, a lot of contact between different countries in the Eastern Mediterranean, and he is resuming this. Shawshank is keeping a good relationship with King Abibal of Byblos. That's one of the Phoenician trading cities in what is today Lebanon.
So what did the... So about the Phoenicians, they had so much influence or so much trade with Egypt. How did they, what were they doing around this time?
The Phoenicians have also been around an insane amount of time. They have been living in these cities, being merchants for, since the third millennium BC.
Wow.
And they are mainly, they want to go on the sea, they want to trade, they live in independent city-states at this time. And they are the inventors of the alphabet, but they kept all the writing on paper and papyrus, so it's lost to us.
Man.
So the sources are really bad, actually, for the Phoenicians, which is weird, as they are the inventors of the alphabet. And it's probably that more people are literate in Phoenician than anywhere else at this time.
That's pretty amazing. Okay, I have to ask.
All right.
Phoenicians, seafarers, and traders... Did they actually like seafood, unlike the people in the last episode?
We don't know, but
we'll
safely assume that, I think.
I would think so, but, you know.
I have to mention one more thing about them, because they are actually in the Golden Age right now. They are having a ball, because they were one of the few survivors of the Bronze Age collapse. When the sea peoples came down the coast from the north and raided everything, the Phoenician cities were fortified well enough. Or maybe they talked their way out of it. So they were sitting behind high walls and they probably sort of delivered supplies to the sea peoples and got out. So everybody else was crushed. The empires fell, the New Hittites, the New Kingdom of Egypt. But the Phoenicians were still there. So they are like, sort of like Sweden after the Second the War. We were years ahead of everyone else when the war ended.
Yeah, it's like you can... Oh, who else did that? Basically saying, oh, we recognize you as an invading country. Hey, how about we just give you stuff? You don't have to waste resources. Yeah. Taking it. Here you go. Let's all just be cool.
If there is a powerful empire... Not to spoil anything, but if there is one, Phoenicia will survive by providing luxury goods to the powerful empire. And powerful emperors and kings, they want luxury goods. And they know if they murder the golden goats, there will be no more luxury stuff.
Yeah.
So who is going to deliver like perfume and weird things from the Mediterranean to the king? Nobody.
Exactly. It's what is shocking to me. And it's always going to be this way. I'm sure I'll bring it up again later. Is the world is shaped by something as tiny as a mustard seed and as ephemeral as perfume. But the entire world will get dominated by these small, small things.
True.
It's amazing to me.
Yeah. Shawshank, actually, he has many pronunciations of his name. I think Shawshank is the correct one. He is dealing with the Phoenicians, and he is not their enemy. But between Phoenicia and Egypt, there is a lot of territory that used to be Egyptian, and it's occupied by the Canaanites, and maybe by the Israelites at this time.
Hmm.
And they are in for a rude awakening. The power of Egypt grows again.
Right. It's coming.
Yep.
So, where else in the world? Like, when we think of the Middle East, we kind of, or in my mind, it seems like this separate place. But it's surrounded. You know, there's what we can, you know, Europe is right next to it. And then you have the Far East.
Yep.
Just on the other side. And we see such dividing lines today. But what was going on even further east in China, in that area of the world at this time?
That reminds me, actually,
yeah.
that the Silk Road, trading mm-hmm. contact between the Near East and China. We'll talk about that in a future episode, but I just read somewhere that there are hints that there is actually some trade even before this, even in the Bronze Age, that objects from China actually make their way to the Near East.
Wow.
But it's very controversial at this time, but we'll talk about that more later. In China, we have the most powerful king of the Zhou Dynasty. Our Chinese listeners have complained. It's not pronounced the Su Dynasty, but the Zhou Dynasty.
Zhou? Okay.
Yes, just like average Zhou.
Yeah. Oh, so it's more of the Russian way of pronouncing it?
Or maybe it's just my Swedish way of saying Zhou. But it's this is the Zhou Dynasty at its height. We have King Mu, who is more ambitious than wise. He rules China. We don't know anything that happened in this decade, but he's ruling China for a long, long time. And episode 6 has a lot on King Mu and his alleged adventures. We call this period of Chinese history between 1045 BC to 771 BC the Western Zhou Dynasty. And the difference between the Western Zhou and the Eastern Zhou, the Eastern Zhou is going on for about 500 more years, is that the Zhou king actually is an all-powerful king in China, whereas he will be a puppet king like the Japanese emperor in the Eastern Zhou Dynasty.
Oh, okay.
But there are like at least 13 powerful states in China that have their traditional rulers. And these rulers have all sworn allegiance to the Zhou king. And the Zhou territory itself is really small, but it's centrally located.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And the really bad thing that Zhou is doing is that if they have these, if a general or a government official is being really loyal, he gets, and then a couple of generations down the line, there are new people ruling this territory who is maybe not as loyal to the old king. And that is the source of their problems in the 8th century BC.
Hmm. Okay. Well, it looks like there's, and this is why history fascinates me, the building blocks of rebellion and the just humans in general, like the system that was established. But like you said, there's some, you know, after generations, the loyalty isn't there like it used to be.
Very true.
So you set up, basically all this is a giant setup for what happens in the future. It's all a giant puzzle, people. We're just watching the edge pieces be put in place, and we don't know what the picture is like. Even today, we still don't. It's like we're constantly adding to it. So,
yeah,
it's very, very interesting. Now, let's see. One other thing. I think it was brought up on the last episode, if I'm not mistaken. Started talking a little bit more about culture in the Americas. What's going on there? And I believe at this time, it's where the poverty point culture is really coming into its own.
Yeah. Since the fall of the North Chico back about 1,000 years ago, the Olmecs, when they arose, have been the one powerful culture in the Americas. And they must have thought that they were alone in the world being civilized. But now, finally, there is something in North America. And this is not... it's always a question how you define civilization. And this is not a civilization that keeps written records, but it seems civilized enough. You have been there, haven't you?
Yes. In the... around the Gulf Coast, Lower Mississippi?
Yep.
Yep.
I think Poverty Point is a national park today.
Yes.
Yeah, this place, right. You can still see some of their mounds.
The mounds, yeah. They were
around between 2200 BC and 700 BC. So they have been doing this for quite some time. But this is the peak of the culture. And I was surprised to find a culture like that so long before Columbus. And I wonder what happened in 700 BC when they went away.
Yeah, there's always some kind of event.
I think about 50% of the people listening to the YouTube show are Americans, so I looked really hard to find something from North America. But once again, in ancient times, South America outperforms North America because a new civilization rises in South America. These guys don't have writing either, but they are, I think, my favorite culture of all of history.
Mm-hmm.
It's the second culture in Peru, but the Norte Chico have been gone for so long, so they have no connection. There's over 500 years, probably more, between them. They are called the Chavins. I think that's the right pronunciation. And their best site is Chavin de Huantar, and that's why they're called the Chavin. And it's important to stress that they have no contact with the Olmecs because there is no way to get from Peru to Mexico at this time. You can't go by sea and you can't go by land because there are the mountains in the way. But what fascinates me with this culture is that they have no warfare. They don't have armies. They don't have walls. They have very little weapons. I don't think they even have weapons. I think they have some knives, perhaps, but not more than that. And they seem to be spreading their culture by just being awesome and making the people nearby into mirror images of themselves. This stage is called the Urrabarrio. It's the first stage of the Chavín, and it goes on until 500 BC, which is probably the break-off point for this narrative structure of this podcast. So we're not going to see the Chavín in any other stage than this. But they a strong religion. And it's all focused around leopards. And that, incidentally, is the focus of the Olmec religion as well. So it seems strange that they didn't have any contact. So they seem to have... They have no rulers, but they have priests. And these priests take narcotic snuff. So you have pictures of the priest with like mucus, is that the word? Running from their nostrils.
Mucus,
yeah. Because they are taking this narcotic stuff. And then they're shape-shifting into leopards.
Wow, that's quite a trick.
And they have enormous, fantastic art. You can see this on their paintings. So, okay, they're extremely peaceful, and they take a lot of drugs. So, I guess you could call them hippies.
Yeah, it seems like they just, on the kind of the flip side of the Babylon that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, they just hang around.
Yeah, hey man, why don't we just eat some guinea pigs?
Yeah, their menu is mainly potatoes, quinoa, guinea pigs, birds, clams, and shellfish. And they spend a lot of time at these sites implementing artistic stuff, and they make waterfalls that sound like roaring jaguars. Of course, they shapeshift into jaguars. Sorry, not leopards. Leopards are an
African. Oh, jaguar. Right. Yeah. So, I knew what you meant, but yeah. I didn't correct it. Like,
okay, but when they were high enough, they might have thought they were left.
Oh, yeah, they went all the way to Africa. Those are some crazy drugs.
And this culture never goes to war with anyone and just peacefully exists there for a very long time.
That's amazing.
So that means we have no archaeological record of any battles or wars. So we know very, very little about them. But they are just awesome, I think.
It seems like a pretty laid-back place to be.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... Their food sources are all, you know, it's a lot of non-violent food source. Because they're not, you know, they're not out hunting, you know, large game.
True, they're just picking up stuff and eating it.
Uh-huh.
And maybe breeding some guinea pigs.
Right, big old fat guinea pigs. Just feed the quinoa to the guinea pigs, get them all big and fat, and yeah, even the clams and shellfish. It's just one of those easily gathered, abundant sources of protein. It's pretty amazing.
So the most violent thing they probably see is or jaguars. That's why they
turn into them.
Yeah.
to
make them chill out too.
Right. Trying to make peace with the jaguars.
When I did this episode on YouTube, it's like 10 minutes long, and we're now 45 minutes in. So I decided to fill out the episode on YouTube with talk a bit about money.
Uh-huh.
Because this is an age where nobody has coins. Coins is, you think coins, and when you hear that coins came in the 6th or 7th century BC, that's a long time ago, but there's an enormous amount of time where people don't have coins. So what do you do? Because trading has been going on since maybe 10,000 BC at least, probably earlier.
Right. You need some kind of standardization.
Yeah, they sort of invent stuff that are like coins, but they are not coins. So there are in the Near East, especially, is of course, that's the point. That's the place where coins will appear. They will appear in Turkey first. And so you have standardized ingots of metal in the Near East. So you have like, okay, this is... And then you have these really strange measurements. But it's five wubaduk of silver. But it means that the money is extremely heavy.
So
very
ingots.
See money. And in the YouTube show, I have pictures of some of this stuff because there is an ingot the size of an oxide in Cyprus.
Wow.
There is also something called knife money where you have like precious knives that you can trade with. So this ox is worth three knives. And we have extensive lists of how much stuff is worth right before coin disappeared from Babylon. So you can like look at the Babylonian price index, and there it's measured in these ingots of metal. But in China, they don't do this. They have been trading in shells of kouri. So it's basically seafood shells. And now they have become advanced. They're in the Bronze Age. Now they make replicas of shells. in bronze.
Oh, that's funny. So you moved from actually trading literal shells to just to recreating the shells in bronze.
I guess they got tired of the guys who went down to the shore and just got more money.
Right. So, makes sense.
This will cause inflation, guys.
Hey, you know what this is? This is government control.
They also seem
at its,
to
at its root.
Spades and hoes in China for values of exchange.
Very interesting. I didn't know that about the exchange rate. I guess I had just assumed that as soon as we figured out metal, we figured out coins.
No, it's fairly late. It will be a culture with a lot of metal that will think about coins first. But that's many episodes ahead.
I know. I jump onto your, I jump into the podcast for the first time, and I'm just disrupting the the timeline flow.
I should mention the YouTube channel. As we had this break in doing the podcast, the YouTube channel has gone far ahead. I'm right now working on the 730s episodes for the YouTube channel. So you can check that out at Fan of History on YouTube. There was a lot more information than I thought when I started this. So many decades are split into three episodes. And I think we need to discuss at some point if we're going to do them as one giant podcast or if we're going to split up the podcast as well.
Okay.
I like giant podcasts for history stuff, but.
Right.
And maybe you can tell us.
Yeah. Listener, in the comments.
How long do you want this to be?
Yeah, it's that's something I've always kind of struggled with. When we're doing a podcast, do people like just the quick hits on the podcast, or do they want something that's a full traffic ride away? That's kind of been my thought, is to make a podcast roughly the length of traffic.
I am not only a fan of history, but I'm also a fan of hardcore history. That's my favorite podcast. That's where I got the name Fan of History. Mm-hmm. And Dan Carlin, who does that podcast, he will not stop. He does episodes that are 5 hours.
So, wow. No, I can't do 5 hours.
Yeah, but we want your opinion. For the YouTube show, on YouTube, everybody's clicking away all the time. So there you have to be short. So that's why I'm splitting up the decades there. But yeah, tell us what you want to hear. How long do you want these things to be? So, what are we talking about next time, Brennan?
Next time, looks like we're going to be talking about Indiana Jones and the Pharaoh who stole the Ark of the Covenant. Dun, 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 dun. And going to be discussing how Shawshank fights his way into the Bible.
Yeah, known as another Shishak in the Bible.
Shishak.
Shishak.
These names are so guttural and powerful.
Yes.
And then we have King Mu celebrates his 105th birthday. That is remarkable.
It is. And you could question how true it is as well.
Yeah. That's true. It says, and also, we're going to be looking at Africa south of the Sahara. So that's what's coming up next time.
Yes. I also like to mention that you can support this show if you think you want to contribute. You can go to patreon.com at Fan of History. Patreon is a site where content creators make promises and keep them if they get enough money. So there is a list of things we will do with the Fan of History project if you like it. So if you could check that out, and if you think this is good stuff,
yeah,
that'll make us happy.
Exactly. It's a way for people to directly support without doing a large. If you don't have to put out, give us $100. That's ridiculous. But if you do like what you hear and this would allow us to dedicate more time to making the show and making it better, getting better equipment, that sort of thing, and getting more advertising so more people can come in, because the more popular it is, the more time we can actually dedicate to it.
Yeah. And it's sort of very clear what you get for the money. So there are commitments from our side. And there is also personal rewards then for people that contribute more. For example, you can get a YouTube show about the historic subject of your choice.
Very cool. So I recommend also going to the YouTube, if you're listening to this on the podcast, subscribe, like, and share. Also, if you are downloading this, please give us a good review on iTunes. And from Dan and I know we both thank you for listening.
Yeah, we should mention Facebook. Facebook.com.
Oh, yes.
It's our most popular outlet for some reason. We are at Twitter as The Fan of History, and there's a website called thefanofhistory.wordpress.com. If you want to leave comments and ask questions, we are very happy, and you can do that on iTunes or just comment on any YouTube video. I'm checking the YouTube comments 10 times a day, I think. So.
Oh, dance quick with the comments, everybody.
Yeah. And that's not my only YouTube channel. So. Oh, well, thanks. Let's move on.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Cheers.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just $1 an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.